Hello and welcome, everybody. The leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, says the U.S. is definitely complicit in the Israeli regime's brutal aggression against the besieged Gaza Strip. Ayatollah Khamenei said the successive arrival of the heads of oppressive and villainous states such as the U.S., the U.K., France, and Germany and Israel bespeaks their concerns about the collapse of the Zionist regime. He added, they reached there to avoid the destruction of Israel. Iran's leader added, their apprehension shows that the Operation Al-Aqsa Flood by the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas was a crushing and decisive one. He stressed that Islamic countries should not be passive in the face of criminals. He said Palestine would definitely emerge victorious. Ayatollah Khamenei made the remarks while addressing a gathering in Tehran. Israel continues its bombardment of the besieged Gaza Strip as more Palestinians fall victim to the deadly airstrikes. The health ministry in Gaza says about 700 Palestinians, including at least 300 children, were killed in the past 24 hours. It said that 50 people were killed in a single hour due to the intensity of the attacks. Israel's war on Gaza is now in its 19th day. Over 6,000 Palestinians have been killed and 18,000 injured so far. The head of the Hamas media office says Israel has bombed Gaza with more than 12,000 tons of explosives. He says this is equivalent to the power of the nuclear bomb that was dropped on the Japanese city of Hiroshima. The regime's strikes are coupled with a crippling siege of Gaza. Israel has also barred any fuel transport into the Strip. This has left hospitals increasingly unable to treat the injured due to the need for fuel to run power generators. The leaders of Lebanese and Palestinian resistance movements have held a meeting to discuss developments in the Gaza Strip since the launch of the Operation Al-Aqsa Flood. According to the Lebanese Al-Manar TV, Hezbollah Secretary General Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah met with Hamas deputy head Saleh al-Aruri and Islamic Jihad's chief Ziad al-Nakhala. The three leaders evaluated the future course of action by the resistance front to achieve a real victory against Israel. They also discussed ways to stop Israeli bloodshed in the Gaza Strip and the West Bank. The trio also talked about regional and global stances on Gaza. They agreed to improve coordination and cooperation in the face of Israel's brutalities against the Palestinians. Hezbollah has said it officially involved alongside the Palestinian resistance in a battle against Israel. Both Hezbollah and regime forces, however, have kept to the rules of engagement. Our correspondent Mariam Saleh reports from south of Lebanon on the situation there.
A few kilometers from the occupied territories in southern Lebanon, war looms once more. Hezbollah's resistance has openly begun a new wave of operations, which is growing into a war of attrition, hitting specific Israeli military targets all along the approximately 130-kilometer border. Behind me stands one of the Israeli posts which have been targeted by resistance groups more than once since the beginning of the war on Gaza. Hezbollah seems to have kept within the rules of engagement while also warning the Israeli regime and the United States that any wrong move could potentially raise the stakes, prompting the resistance group to move to the next level. People who have remained in the border town say they are bracing for a new confrontation.
We are steadfast. We never thought of taking refuge or leaving, and we are ready for war. We fear nothing.
We call on Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah. If you decide to go to war, we are ready. Just give us a signal. If we lose one martyr, there will be 1,000 more to replace him. Thousands are ready to sacrifice their lives for this country. We are not afraid. We will see victory, and God willing, soon we will be in Gaza.
Israel's shelling of bordering towns is also intensified. Early morning strikes are the usual. Mohammed Barakat looks around his destroyed house. When we asked him if he was looking for something, he said humorously that he's looking for the keys to the house. He tells us had his family been gathering then, there would have been a massacre.
We are with the resistance at times of war and peace, and we will always be with the resistance. This is a very small sacrifice. Sayyid Nasrallah is very wise, and we trust him. He knows what he is doing.
Our people have gotten used to the barbaric atrocities of the Israelis. and we believe that all this destruction and killing has not stopped the people from continuous resistance and being steadfast in their land. The enemy which targets hospitals does not respect any rules. It is only struggle and strength that can stop them.
The separation wall which Israel has built around the occupied territories has not stopped Hezbollah or other resistance groups like Hamas and Islamic Jihad in Lebanon from launching operations. The current state of tit-for-tat strikes in a limited battle zone could become the new status quo for weeks, if not months. Maryam Saleh, South Lebanon.
The Al-Qassam Brigade's armed wing of Hamas has staged a massive rocket attack targeting Tel Aviv as Palestinians keep up responding to Israeli bombardment of the besieged Gaza Strip. Israeli media have described the attack as the biggest strike targeting Tel Aviv since the beginning of the war on October the 7th. Other Israeli cities, including Ashdod and Beersheba, have also been targeted. A number of casualties have been reported. Hamas also attacked Israeli forces in several areas, including Mafkaim. Meanwhile, the Al-Quds Brigades, the military wing of the Palestinian Islamic Jihad, also staged various missile attacks on Israel. Over 1,400 Israelis have been killed in attacks by the resistance front since October the 7th. Thousands of others have also been wounded. An Israeli captive released by Hamas has praised the Palestinian resistance movement's treatment of her and other captives. She says they were treated well during captivity.
My mom is saying that they were very friendly towards them and that they took care of them.
My mom is speaking about the time there. She's telling us about sharing food with the people, that the people, when she first arrived, they told them that they are Muslims and they're not going to hurt them. And that they ate the same food that the Hamas was eating.
The statements by the 85-year-old Yosheved Lifshitz have triggered a wave of criticism in Israel. Soon after her remarks, Israel's official broadcaster said it was a mistake to let her make live statements. Lifshitz's account of humane treatment has exposed mainstream media their propaganda against Hamas fighters. Western and Israeli media have so far reported dissimilar narratives of the Israeli captives in recent days, mostly dehumanizing resistance fighters. Hamas captured more than 200 Israelis, including soldiers. During the Operation Al-Aqsa flood, two elderly women were released on humanitarian grounds. The resistance group says some of the captives have been killed in Israeli airstrikes on Gaza. For more insight, we're now joined by political analyst Barry Grossman, who's joining us from Bali, Indonesia. Mr. Grossman, welcome to the program. Give us your perspective on what's taken place over the past few days with regards to the war on Gaza. Why is aid not getting in to Gaza? And why are the aerial assaults and the indiscriminate bombing still continuing as we speak?
I think there's more than a few of us that don't think this assault on Gaza has anything to do with fighting Hamas, and that in fact it's part of the long-running occupation plan to advance this ethnic cleansing and basically clean all of Palestine from Palestinians so that they can absorb the territory. It certainly makes no sense on the one hand to say that they're targeting Hamas and acknowledge that only a very few people are associated with Hamas in Gaza, and then to turn around and engage in this carpet bombing of all of Gaza that makes it look like Hiroshima just exploded, and in the process killing thousands of children and several thousand others, very few of whom have anything to do with Hamas. So it's not surprising that the resistance, that Hamas and the wider resistance, instead of simply letting this all slide, are starting to take the fight back to the occupation. Where it all ends, I suppose, is impossible to say. But it's unrealistic to expect any other response. In fact, even and Antonio Guterres, the Secretary General of the UN, pointed out in what I thought were quite non-controversial terms, that this conflict in Gaza and the occupation shelling of Gaza needs to be understood in its historical context. And for that, he was called out and told to resign for engaging in what was described as blood libel by occupation authorities, which is really quite absurd. Nobody's safe. Now we hear that people who've been released for humanitarian reasons are pointing out that they were treated very well, very humanely, and the response coming out of the occupied territories is that these people shouldn't be given a platform from which to speak to the public, that needs to be hushed up so they can continue to portray Palestinians in general and resistance fighters in particular to be something less than human, which is how this all started, with some officials describing Palestinians as being just that, less than human, and therefore not being entitled to any human rights. What is clear is that everything that's unfolded, every tactic used by the occupation, is itself a violation of international law. Only yesterday, an independent commission of inquiry from the UN found that a couple of years ago, the almost 200 people killed by the occupation near the border were killed without any justification, and that in doing so probably engaged in war crimes. We saw a few months ago the UN Human Rights Commission make a finding after very, very careful examination in which they said the burden of proof for establishing that Israel is an apartheid state has been met, and that as a result of the policies that they're advancing in this apartheid state and against their neighbors, they're committing crimes against humanity. Yet the United Nations, it's turned out yet again, has been completely unable to do anything, because ultimately it exists to be used by Atlantic world countries to do their bidding. Never are they able to come down with a finding which is implemented by the Security Council. And there have been many findings against Israel. In fact, I don't think there's a country on the planet that's had fewer resolutions passed against it, denouncing its conduct than Israel. And included in these resolutions, expressly mentioning Palestinians, was one in 1982, where the Palestinian right to armed resistance was officially recognized, confirmed by the United Nations General Assembly. So here we are today. There's been very little progress, and it's not surprising that Hamas, rather than going into hiding, is continuing to take the fight against occupation forces. How long they are going to be able to continue to fight with kid gloves on remains to be seen. We hear a lot about Hamas fighters supposedly hiding amongst the civilian population in Gaza. And of course, in saying that, they ignore the fact that in Gaza is a very densely populated territory, and there really is no place other than places inhabited in great numbers by civilians. On the other hand, in the occupied territories, the occupation forces have deliberately established military bases and communication centers for the military in very heavily populated suburbs and cities. So who's using who as human shield? Unfortunately, it looks like this is going to get worse before it gets better. There's absolutely no willing part of the occupation to grant a ceasefire, and there's nobody pushing them from the United States or the United Kingdom, or for that matter, France, to engage in a humanitarian ceasefire.
Thank you, Mr. Grossman. That's it with the world news for now. Bye, everybody.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim.
Assalamu alaykum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
همه با وجود غده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم.
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel.
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
In this program, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a part of a speech delivered by Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with the veterans from the Sacred Defense and the Resistance Field. This meeting was held in the Imam Khomeini Hosseiniya on September 20, 2023, inaugurating Sacred Defense Week. I would like to say a few words about the armed forces. First of all, the armed forces are one of the definite honors of every society. Their presence and existence is one of the main elements without which a society cannot survive. Consider the fact that someone like the commander of the faithful Imam Ali alayhi salam says, "The army is the fortress of the people." This is mentioned in Nahjul Balagha, letter 53. It is the people's fortress. The commander of the faithful is saying this. This is not a joke. The army is the fortress for the people. In other words, the armed forces provide security. We must appreciate the armed forces. The honor and dignity of the armed forces must be considered to be one of the essential necessary issues. We must respect the armed forces. The armed forces provide security. Security is everything. If there is no security, there is no science, there is no economy, there is no peace of mind for families, and there is no comfort. Security is everything in a country. The armed forces provide security.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
The armed forces should be taken care of in different ways. Their presence should be valued and their efforts should be respected. This applies to those who establish the security on our borders as well as those who ensure security inside the country. Some have safeguarded the borders so that insecurity does not creep inside the country from outside the borders. Some others have confronted those that create insecurity inside the country. This latter group is also valuable. They need to be taken care of. Well, the enemy has concentrated on this point as well. One of the things that our enemies stress is harming the value of the armed forces or damaging the honor and dignity of the armed forces. They work in these areas using all kinds of methods. We need to be mindful of this.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done.
Fires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
Israel's war in Gaza may have brought devastation to the Strip, accompanied by the massacre of civilians, mostly women and children. But Israel's knee-jerk reaction to its complete intel and military failure at the hands of Hamas and resistance fighters may have another casualty, Israel itself. Prior to the war, Israel was not on solid footing. It faced many threats on a variety of fronts, most notably the judicial reforms. 8 months of protests against the Prime Minister Netanyahu and its extreme cabinet members had turned many inside Israel against Netanyahu. Israel's staunchest ally, the U.S., had expressed grave concerns about the push for the judicial reforms, with the U.S. President Joe Biden stating publicly that Netanyahu should not go for it. But Netanyahu did not, or could not, back out. Meanwhile, former Israeli politicians, like the former Prime Minister Ehud Barak, have expressed grave concern about Israel's survival altogether, saying the entity will cease to exist before the 80th anniversary of its 1948 establishment. He said Jews had not ruled for more than 80 years throughout history, predicting a doom and gloom scenario for Israel. This gloom and doom scenario was unfolding in Israel. Take the economy. Since the protests broke out 8 months ago, Israel's economy was heading down a downward spiral. This included lower GDP growth, a decrease in investment, especially in the tech sector, and both capital and Israeli flight. Israeli far-right ministers like Ben-Gvir and Smotrich promoted a crackdown on Palestinians. This included near-daily raids, resulting in deaths, injuries, detainments. The death toll had reached over 250, a record number. This is while Itamar Ben-Gvir was pushing the envelope when it came to the Al-Aqsa Mosque. In his long-term goal to Judaize the mosque, the number of raids inside the mosque accompanied by settlers and the regime security forces were increasing. Hamas and the resistance groups issued warning after warning about the desecration of the Al-Aqsa Mosque, that the time would come when it would retaliate. But that had fallen on deaf ears. Until October 7th, when Operation Al-Aqsa Flood was executed. Defense One News, close to the U.S. military, had this to say about the Hamas and resistance fighters. They have absolutely exquisite intelligence on the location of Israeli secret bases, on their communications capabilities. They knew exactly where to go, knew where the critical communications nodes were, that they were able to destroy with drones and other kinetic strikes to try to impede the response. And that they did, and even more. Israel was caught off guard, flat-footed, and within a blink of an eye, its invincibility shattered. Dropping U.S. bombs on innocent Palestinian civilians would not solve Israel's problems. It actually made it worse. And this carnage, which included deaths on a massive scale, mostly women and children, engulfed the entire world, which came out in protest against the Israeli regime. And like a house of cards, it brought the rest of its supporters down with it, which included resignations of high-ranking officials. The U.S. image was now tainted, associated once again as an accomplice to the one committing war crimes like it did in Yemen. The State Department official, Josh Paul, resigned over the Biden administration's militaristic approach to the conflict. He said he could not support sending over arms, which he believed to be short-sighted, destructive, unjust, and contradictory to the very values that we publicly espouse to. U.S. politicians, mainly Democrats, were also voicing their anger at Israel and U.S. military assistance. Spain's acting Minister of Social Rights, Bellara, called for economic sanctions against Israel and the suspension of diplomatic relations, one of many government officials around the world who are rethinking their relations with Israel. Many Israelis are blaming Netanyahu for the downfall of Israel and have demonstrated against them, demanding his resignation. Settlements emptied along the Gaza border, an incapable army, an economy tanking, a war that has lost already, especially when it comes to world opinion, and the occupied territories now filled with hate between armed settlers and Palestinians, ready to blow up. Israel is facing an existential threat that may deal the final blow. They have tried to suppress the voice of the Palestinians. Common catchphrases, all-out support for Israel, unwavering support, and the likes. But finally, the world is not buying it. No amount of media coverage can cover up the Israeli crimes, including America's all-out support.
And we stand with the Palestinians, and we stand with Arabs. And they try and change the narrative because you own the narrative, see? This is our problem. You own the narrative. You own the United Nations. You own Hollywood. You own all these mouthpieces. Where are our voices? Our voices need to be heard as well. We've been watching your channel. And instead of mourning our dead, instead of mourning these Palestinian children, we've been having to deal with more dehumanization of Arabs.
And the proof that the tide is turning are in the worldwide protest.
Are here just to show the support for our people in Gaza.
What we're experiencing today, it's happening in Palestine, is a genocide.
I'm here because I'm a Jew born in Jerusalem, and I'm horrified and enraged that my government here in the U.S. is sending weapons and money and never-ending, unconditional diplomatic support for Israel.
The world rallying behind Palestinians and Palestine. And it's not because Israel is murdering Palestinians, mostly women and children. Just think about it. How can this war bring out so many people from all corners of the world in such high numbers? It's because the world has been educated. It's informed now. It has witnessed four wars before. And it has seen the daily oppression and killing of Palestinians under an apartheid regime. Now U.S. politicians are speaking in a way that they haven't before.
Congresswoman representing the Massachusetts 7th Congressional District.
Where is your humanity? How do you look at one atrocity and say this is wrong? But you watch as bodies pile up, as neighborhoods are leveled, Israel has dropped more bombs in the last 10 days than we dropped in a whole year in Afghanistan. Where is your humanity? Where is your outrage? Where is your care?
The passion in her voice from an American politician is for life and how it's being snuffed out, taken away with a missile, ones that are made in the USA. Since the war started, 45 cargo planes transported weapons from the U.S. to Israel. Among the military aid, around 1,000 tons of armaments, including 155-millimeter artillery shells, military vehicles, and supplies.
To President Biden and his administration, generations will not forget, and history will be recorded, that it was your administration, your billions of dollars, your support with weapons of mass destruction.
A veteran U.S. State Department official quit over what he described as the Biden administration's intellectual bankruptcy, in which he said Biden is rushing to provide arms to Israel, which is short-sighted, destructive, unjust, and contradictory to the very values that we publicly espouse. A CBS poll asked whether the U.S. should send weapons to Israel. More than half the respondents said that it should not. That is another first. And while we are on first-time occurrences, this is a first, which occurred at the Human Rights Council session in Geneva. The council members turned their back to the American ambassador's speech in Geneva. This happened during her speech preaching about human rights, while America's all-out support and bombs were killing Palestinians as she was speaking. The true face of the Israeli regime and the U.S. backing has rocked the U.S. status quo when it comes to Israel. Widespread attempts to suppress pro-Palestinian voices have reached unprecedented levels in the U.S. The cancellation of major conferences, demands for the dismissal of workers who express support for Palestinians, and intimidation campaigns against Arab American voices critical of Israeli policies are just some examples. This has even affected U.S. lawmakers, like Senator Elizabeth Warren, once a U.S. presidential candidate, in which more than 260 of her staffers signed an open letter demanding that she call for an immediate ceasefire between Israel and Hamas, describing Israel as increasingly fascist, that commits war crimes and enforces a brutal apartheid, calling for an immediate ceasefire. But only certain U.S. lawmakers have the guts to openly support Palestine.
You know what's so hard sometimes is watching those videos and the people telling the kids don't cry and like let them cry. And they're shaking and some of you know this, they keep telling them not to cry in Arabic. They can cry, I can cry, we all can cry. If we're not crying, something is wrong. And so I'm telling you right now, President Biden, not all America's with you on this one.
Previous Israeli crimes are no secret. Kana, 1996. Israel bombed a UN shelter, killing 106 civilians, mostly kids. Israel was never held accountable. Lebanon, 1982. The Sabra and Shatila massacre resulted in the killings of between 2,000 and 3,500 Palestinian refugees and Lebanese civilians in 2 days in the city of Beirut. Previous massacres of Palestinians by Israel have been etched in people's minds, especially the wars on the Gaza Strip, which is why the BDS movement, Boycott, Divestment, and Sanction, requires a reboot, one to include Israeli officials, including the pilots who dropped the bombs, on the Palestinians. After all, now is the time that sanctioning Israeli products could prove successful, since Israel's economy is tanking due to the war. We mentioned a couple of first-time incidents before. Here's another. Thousands of Muslims praying in front of the U.S. Congress to demand a ceasefire in Gaza. A scene that creates a sense of deja vu. For this is reminiscent of how Palestinians have prayed in front of the Al-Aqsa Mosque in their future capital.
Allah.
Since the beginning of the latest spate of violence between Israel and Palestinian resistance fighters in the Gaza Strip, Western countries and the U.S. in particular have voiced their unequivocal support for Israel and ignored the legitimate rights of the Palestinian people. The U.S. President Joe Biden visited Israel on Wednesday amid an intensified Israeli campaign of airstrikes on Gaza, the most densely populated strip of land in the world, which has killed thousands of Palestinians, injuring over 13,000. Biden has unequivocally defended the Israeli regime's ongoing genocide in the coastal Gaza Strip. Biden said Washington would provide the embattled regime with everything it needed to, quote, defend itself.
For decades, we've ensured Israel's qualitative military edge. And later this week, I'm going to ask the United States Congress for an unprecedented support package for Israel's defense.
The U.S. president promised to ask Congress for an unprecedented military aid package for Israel to assist its ongoing war on Gaza. Reports indicated that Biden was considering a supplemental request of about $10 billion for Israel. It is now feared that the U.S. President Joe Biden's unflinching backing of Israeli aggression against Palestinians in the besieged Gaza Strip could give the Tel Aviv regime the green light to commit mass atrocities and genocide against the people of Palestine. It is now reported that Joe Biden has told Israeli Prime Minister that Washington is fully in support of Tel Aviv's plans to launch a ground invasion of the besieged Gaza Strip. Earlier this week, the leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Khamenei, highlighted the role of the U.S. in Israel's ongoing atrocities against the Palestinian people. Ayatollah Khamenei noted that numerous pieces of information suggest that the U.S. is formulating the current policy within the Zionist regime. The U.S. was the sole vote against the resolution on Wednesday. Reports say the Pentagon, if need be, will deploy virtually 2,000 troops to Israel to assist the occupying regime with its war on the besieged Gaza Strip. The boots on the ground are said to be tasked with providing advisory and medical support only. The specifics, the where and when of the deployment, remain unclear. The report comes after the Pentagon said it was moving another carrier group to the Mediterranean, the USS Dwight D. Eisenhower Strike Group. Combined force of more than 5,000 sailors will join the USS Gerald Ford, which arrived off the coast of Israel last week. The Biden administration has rejected Arab calls for de-escalation or ceasefire, rendering the U.S. complicit in present and future Israeli war crimes. There's been hardly any American mention of the Palestinians' plight during a week of vicious Israeli bombardment of Gaza. For years, polls have highlighted the overwhelming Arab support for Palestine as the foremost Arab cause, and the growing hostility towards America, which is seen as a destabilizing hegemonic force in the region.
There is the possibility that if the war really widens not only to include Gaza, but maybe the West Bank, that it will not only alienate Arab allies, but could potentially lead to a breaking of relations with Israel.
First of all, Biden is unwelcome here because he has a major role in this game, a major role in the aggression on our people, and he is providing the money and weapons to kill our people in Gaza and everywhere.
The long history of U.S. military aid to Israel has helped the regime develop its military prowess, and it continues to represent a significant share of Israel's military budget. Currently, Israel receives $3.8 billion in military aid from the U.S. annually, under a memorandum signed in 2019.
Instead, what we have seen is that Israel has been allowed to do whatever it wants when it comes to killing Palestinians, when it comes to stealing Palestinian land, when it comes to ethnic cleansing, when it comes to crossing the red lines that are enshrined in international law. Israel's allowed to get away with it, and not only get away with it, but continues to receive support and financial support from the United States as well.
That accounted for about 16% of Israel's total military budget in 2022. The U.S. has strong historical and economic ties to Israel. The U.S. is Israel's top trading partner, with annual bilateral trade of nearly $50 billion in goods and services.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Imam Ali alayhi salatu wasalam, the reason we love him as our hero, or not only in the material sense, in the spiritual sense, in the leadership sense.
لا يقيم أمر الله سبحانه إلا من لا يصانع ولا يضارع ولا يتبع المطامع.
I would like to take this opportunity to talk about one dimension of the personality of Amir al-Mu'mineen.
السلام عليك يا أمين الله في أرض.
Peace be upon you, O trusted guardian, appointed by Allah.
The universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam in To My Brother. Imam Ali alayhi salam was brought up under the care of the Holy Prophet Muhammad when he was just a small child. And so in this manner, the foundation of the moral and spiritual education of this magnificently intelligent child was based by the Prophet of Islam himself, the greatest educator of all mankind. Imam Ali's mental faculties were to an extent that he believed in the Holy Prophet and his mission at the tender age of 8. Therefore, Imam Ali, contrary to the other companions of the Holy Prophet, had never worshipped idols and never partook in the unreasonable demands, the oppressive actions, or the unjust acts of the Arab chieftains.
قال أمير المؤمنين علي عليه السلام أول عوض الحليم من حلمه أن الناس أنصاره على الجاهل.
أمير المؤمنين علي عليه السلام said, "The first reward the exerciser of forbearance gets is that people become his helpers against the ignorant."
Welcome back, dear friends. It's great to have you with us. This is IRIB, English Radio, the programs To My Brother, and we are discussing the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam. So, dear friends, of course, we see in the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam this perfect, living, breathing miracle of the Messenger of Allah sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi. We see the concept of modesty and chastity. So Imam Ali alayhi salam, it is related that he ended up being married, and he married, of course, the daughter of the Messenger of Allah, Lady Fatima al-Zahra alayha salam. We find that at least he was around, you know, in his early 20s when he got married, according to some, you know, traditions, 21, 22, 23. Right around this kind of a time frame. So he got married while he was relatively young. But that does not mean that he didn't go through a phase where, as far as our, you know, language in the modern day, he had to be modest and chaste. So he was modest, he was chaste. It's interesting, it's related about the Messenger of Allah that before he was married, which is around the same time, age-wise, you know, 23, 24, 25, etc., according to narrations. But before this, he was considered to be a very chaste human being. He was completely far away from these kind of moral and ethical corruptions that were happening during his age. And here we find the same thing about Imam Ali alayhi salam. that he was a very chaste individual. He was a very modest individual. He was very pure. He was very clean. He was untainted by these moral and ethical corruptions of his time. So here, I mean, this is clearly a lesson for us based upon the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam. And what's really interesting is Imam Ali alayhi salam, he says that the zakat and the tax of beauty is chastity. What kind of a world do we live in the present day? When we look around, we find that, you know, the more beautiful an individual is, and that beauty too is being dictated by the mass media, it is beauty which is being, you know, pushed down the throats of individuals. And, you know, the standard for beauty now is a standard which has been created by the, you know, materialist, consumerist companies. What they tell you is beautiful and what they tell you is ugly. But regardless, even according to their own, you know, standards of beauty, but a person who is beautiful according to the standards of their, you know, beauty standards, that individual shows themselves more, they reveal themselves more than anybody else. And how unfortunate. Here Imam Ali is saying that if you are beautiful by any standards, right? If you are beautiful, then the zakat and the tax and what is necessary is to be chaste and to conceal that beauty and to protect that beauty from individuals who don't warrant the right to be able to witness that beauty. So what am I saying? I'm saying is mahram and non-mahram. So mahram individuals, you know, our husband or, our relatives such as our parents or our siblings, you know, and the like. But what we're talking about here is that an individual's, the more beautiful that an individual is, the more chaste they should be, the more modest they should be. They shouldn't be out there, you know, taking selfies and posting it on everywhere. And this is something that the world needs in the present day, this aspect of being chaste, being modest, you know, saving yourself for marriage, making sure to be married, and to live this Islamic lifestyle, and of course to be chaste. A very necessary lesson for the present day brought to us by the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam.
Ali Imam Manasto Manam Gulam Ali Ali Imam Manasto Manam Gulam Ali Madar Jaan Girami Fidae Naam Ali
Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of iRab English Radio, the program To My Brother. This moment, I invite you to listen to the Arabic text of Ziyara Aminullah along with the English translation. Please stay tuned.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. أشهد أنك جاهدت في الله حق جهاده وعملت بكتابه واتبعت سنن نبيه.
I testify that you made utmost efforts, as it should be, in the cause of Allah, acted upon His book, followed the way of life of His Prophet, blessings of Allah be on him and his children, to the last moment of your life, until Allah invited you to come unto Him and used his discretion to take you away and sealed your enemy's doom with the blame that the arguments had been made known to one and all through you. O Allah, let me be happy and satisfied with that which Thou considers good for me. Let me agree with that which Thou decides for me. Let me passionately remember Thee and invoke Thee. Let me be in love with Thy pure and sincere friends. Let me be well-liked and respected on the earth and in the heavens. Let me be unruffled and well-composed in the midst of misfortunes. Let me be gratefully thankful in prosperity. Let me be mindful of much and more bounties. Let me ardently desire for the heart-warming meeting with Thee, well-equipped with piety to gain my end on the day of requital. Let me follow into the footsteps of Thy representatives. Let me disassociate myself from the mannerism of Thy enemies. Let me pass my time in this world by praising and glorifying Thee. كل صبح وكل اشراق ايام تبكى عيني بدمع مشتاق ايام قد لسعت حية الهوى كبدي فلا تبي ولها ولا راغي Now we invite you to listen to Sheikh Ja'far Ja'far.
The best example of such a personality is none other than our first Imam alayhi salam. Because he has such a gravitational pull that just the mention of his name makes my heart beat faster. Yeah? Who can deny that? Haydar. Haydar. What is it about Haydar, huh? I say Haydar and our hearts begin to beat faster. This is something that is a gravitational pull from birth that I have with Ali ibn Abi Talib alayhi salam. But there are people today who have such animosity for Ali ibn Abi Talib that they are willing to kill just because they are the followers of Ali ibn Abi Talib. Look at these suicide bombers, yeah? These cowards. Why are they killing the Shias? Because they are going for ziyarat of the Aimma alayhim salam. Yeah? This is why you see that nobody in history has such a pull. And as time goes by, my brothers and sisters, our love for Ali or the enemy's hatred for Ali increases. This shows that there is no personality like Ali. And this is described in a very beautiful hadith coming from Imam alayhi salam, where he says, غَدًا تَرَوْنَ أَيَّامِي وَيَكْشِفُ لَكُمْ عَنْ سَرَائِرِي. He says, tomorrow, not today, tomorrow you will know who I am, he says. Huh? Tomorrow, not today. Tomorrow you will know who I am and you will look back upon my days and understand my merits, he says. The people of his time could not understand what Ali ibn Abi Talib was saying to them. The people of his time could not understand who Ali ibn Abi Talib alayhi salam was. When he would say, Saluni, Saluni, qabla an tafqiduni, an ignorant person stands up and says, tell me how many hairs I have in my head. Yeah? Imagine. When they had the opportunity to get the ilm of the awwalina wal akhirin, they ask an ignorant question like that. This is a lesson for us, my brothers and sisters. Everything that has happened for us is a lesson for us that we gain understanding from these and change our views. You see, we are people who will only truly appreciate something when it's gone. Yes? We are like that. Yeah? When the ni'mah of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, forget ni'mah, the ni'am of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala showered upon us day after day, we will only recognize the greatness of it when something of it slips away. When my health begins to deteriorate, I'll think of Allah and say, ah, I wish I had taken care of my health. Yeah. When I get out of the realm of youth and get into adulthood, I will look back at my youth and say, I wish I had taken more time in my youth. Yeah? The same way, when the imams were present in front of the people, they didn't say anything, they didn't do anything, they didn't maximize it. Then we look back and say, Ya Allah, yeah, That's why we recite in this dua. The most beautiful line I feel we recite in dua, in dua al-iftitah is Allahumma inna nashku ilayka faqda nabiyina salawatuka alayhi wa alihi wa ghaibata waliyina wa kathrata aduwina wa qillata adadina.
Dear listeners, we hope you enjoyed this episode of To My Brother. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.ir/EN Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care. Bye for now.
Mother, don't cry for me. I'm heading off to war. God Almighty is my armor and sword. Palestine, forever Palestine. Children being killed for throwing stones in the sky. They say to their parents, don't worry, God is on our side. Palestine, forever Palestine.
Black and white.
La historia de Colombia.
The history of Colombia is linked with the absence of democracy. Colombia hasn't enjoyed democratic moments since the very beginning, even before the establishment of the Republic. In the past, the liberals also used their weapons to express their political points of view. They used to carry out armed movements to express themselves. There have been different forms of armed expressions in Colombia for 60 years. Expressions that led to the formation no longer of simple guerrillas, but of true armies with territorial positions and with effective government in certain sectors, especially peasants in Colombia. We must understand that the National Liberation Army that's participating in the negotiation process today is an armed group, and it is not a simple guerrilla. We can say the same about the presence of the FARC-EP, which at the time was even in a kind of technical tie with the reactionary armed forces. Politics has always been carried out in Colombia with weapons in hand. There are also other guerrilla forces, the Popular Liberation Army. Even the M19, to which the current president Gustavo Petro belonged. All then to fight for democracy, rights, sovereignty, and independence from the United States. They have always carried weapons. According to some analysts and Amnesty International, 8,500,000 people, 17% of the Colombian population, have been affected in the armed conflicts directly, and the entire society, by the way, indirectly. A conflict that has not been sought by the people or by the forces that have taken up arms, but precisely by the savage and bloodthirsty oppression of the landowners, of those who are always on the side of imperialism in this case. Today, the U.S. has 7 military bases in Colombian territory. The peace processes that have taken place in Colombia, as was the case with the FARC, have been boycotted very strongly by the U.S. For example, the detention and retention to this day in the United States in a North American prison of one of the main leaders of the FARC, such as Simon Trinidad, is a way of making the peace process not to be accepted.